Good evening, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. It's a funny program again this week because for the second week running, there is no message through Sheldon Nidal from the Galactic Federation. It's not time for another Matthew message unless he chooses to issue another one, and they are not normally that frequent. So I'm going to start off the program with what I call the general news. I have a few items under my general title of UFOs, ETs and whatever, and I have quite a good collection of channeled messages of a spiritual nature, and I'll have ample certainly to complete the program this evening. Now, the topic of the week must be the war between Israel and the Lebanon, but not too much seems to have crossed my path this week about it. I have to say that within my own messages there is an indication that perhaps the dark forces are not quite achieving what they have set out to do, which is to create fear through the death and destruction that is taking place. Clearly that does exist in the areas that are affected and possibly those that are immediately outside. But the messages I get seem to say that the backlash of opinion against the war is producing a great energy for good, a light that they think may yet be the undoing of those people who are behind these type of events. So that will be interesting. Naturally, there is a lot of criticism all round of Bush and his refusal to call for a ceasefire, and of course Blair is also criticised for the same reasons. It's interesting, I believe, that Blair, and I'm speaking here from the UK, is possibly as unpopular at the moment as Bush is in the States, and he has very little backing from within his own cabinet or his MPs. So one wonders how long they will put up with this situation, and the only way in the UK at the moment that they can remove Blair is for someone to mount a challenge against his leadership. It's difficult actually to see that happening or where the person is coming from who would be likely to succeed. But it appears that this degree of death and destruction that we're seeing is really getting home to people who perhaps up to now may not have reacted, say, to what had happened in Iraq. So it's building up, I think, to a finale, and hopefully that may be an outcome which will see permanent peace. At least that's what we're happening. Now, the only item I've got here that I want to read out to you is one that has circulated the email group that I get information from. And this one comes from a Yahoo group called Impeachbush Now. And it's headed The Shame of Being an American. And it's by Paul Craig Roberts. And it was sent out actually at the end of July. It seems to have now surfaced on the email circuit. But I think some of the things he is saying are worth repeating because they must reflect what a lot of other people think. And he's clearly making his own assumptions here, so we must bear that in mind. We do not know what background he has, or shall we say authority or knowledge, to make the statements he does. So I will quote him by saying, and this is at the start of his email, "Do you know that Israel is engaged in ethnic cleansing in southern Lebanon? Israel has ordered all the villagers to clear out. Israel then destroys their homes and murders the fleeing villagers. That way there is no one to come back and nothing to which to return, making it easier for Israel to grab the territory just as Israel has been stealing Palestine from the Palestinians. Now, so far, that's probably fair comment, fair appraisal of what is happening. And he says, do you know that one-third of the Lebanese civilians murdered by Israel's attacks on civilian residential districts are children? Now, I'm not necessarily disputing that, but I think it must be hard to get accurate figures on that. But certainly, the news items we're seeing do suggest that there are quite a lot of children involved. Now, he said, that is the report from Jan Egeland, the Emergency Relief Coordinator for the UN. And he says it's impossible for help to reach the wounded and those buried in the rubble because Israeli airstrikes have blown up all the bridges and roads. And the report says, considering how often, which is almost always, Israel misses Hezbollah targets and hits civilian ones, might one think that Israeli fire is being guided by US satellites and US military GPS? And it says, don't be surprised at US complicity. Why would the puppet be any less evil than the puppet master? He says, of course, you don't know these things because the US print and TV media do not report them. And he just goes on to comment how Bush must be proud of himself because he has blocked every effort to stop the Israeli slaughter of Lebanese civilians. Bush has told the UN no, he's told the European community no, and he's told the pro-American Lebanese minister no twice. And the writer here, Paul Craig Roberts, reckons that Bush is very proud of his firmness. And so the report goes on. They really are the only bits I want to extract from it, although it's worth perhaps mentioning, as he has, that on July the 20th, and I quote, he says, your House of Representatives voted 410-8 in favour of Israel's massive war crimes in Lebanon. And not content with making every American complicit in war crimes, your House of Representatives, according to the Associated Press, also condemns enemies of the Jewish state. So there we are. Someone who's decided to speak out, but then maybe at the moment that's not unusual. Now, last week I mentioned one or two channeled messages that related to quite some strong predictions that would in the meantime have come to be had they been correct. And I said I would look back upon them to see what happened. So if you were listening into that and you don't already know, I think you would undoubtedly like to hear what happened. So just to recap, there was a message from Ray Ramsey from the, as they call it, the Celestial Meeting. And what it said was that there was a basic plan to immediately implement the steps of the changeover. That is starting with the change of government and the change in the economic system, saying that all procedures and personnel are in place and that many of the operations are quietly going forward, though mostly not seen till the final moments. And these were to radically increase divine intervention with conflicting parties, visible and hidden, and this will include the use of galactic technology to decrease the effectiveness of battles or render weapons non-functional or non-existent. And it goes on to mention, for example, that Federation soldiers would appear on the ground, both in local uniforms and their own. And there would be meetings and face-to-face discussions, etc. And that is a prediction of something, as it said, was to immediately implement the steps of the changeover. Okay, so what does it mean by immediate? Nothing to our knowledge has happened so far, but what the message did say a little later was we have been granted permission to intervene, and this means in any way that we deem necessary. So you wonder at what stage, if that be true, that intervention will take place. So maybe we could admit that that one is still on the cards, so perhaps there is yet something to come of that. Now, one that was more pointed, or to the point, I should say, was from a meeting which is listed here as being between St. Germain and Christ Michael. That was on July the 22nd, and it read that I wish to announce there will be a change in the government in the United States of America and a beginning of the Nasara program this week. Now, this week would have allowed for something to happen up to the 30th of July. Now, again, to the best of my knowledge, nothing has appeared on the email circuit to indicate that anything of that nature has happened. I mean, certainly we know there hasn't been a change of government. So that one seems to have gone by the board. I suppose it could have been put off for some reason. It could come up again later. But there you are. That's one prediction, very strong one there, that hasn't really come to anything at all. Finally, there was yet another one at the end of July through Sananda, through a channel called Loren. And it said that we, the hierarchy, are about to intervene on behalf of all light workers everywhere. And this has been decreed by the High Councils, and it is in their jurisdiction to see this through. They talk of life on Earth becoming a confusing place and how the wall's been pulled over our eyes for so long, and that the truth will seem unrecognisable and foreign, and mentioning that a shockwave would permeate the Earth and will be the beginning of the entrance of a new domain. And they say, in the next moments of your reality, you will see and be exposed to things that will be disheartening. In best cases, the truth for your present regime and world leaders will come in the form of a shock. Okay, that's sort of fair enough. They said, we, the hierarchy, are about to intervene. So one could assume that something of that nature is still in the process of taking place. So anyway, I thought I'd come back to those because there's no point in mentioning these type of predictions or indications as to what will happen without a follow-up. Now, an email that went around on the 30th of July spoke about something you may have heard. The Leo Wanta Fund, as I think it's now been named. This was a report by Greg Szymanski, who I think writes, or certainly is featured a lot, on the Rens.com site. Very interesting site, lots of useful information. And he's referring, this is on the 30th of July, to sources close to the recent G8 summit in St. Petersburg, Russia, and talking about pressure from financial big shots and foreign heads of states has put the heat big time on the Bush administration that particular weekend to release $4.5 trillion earmarked for the American people. And the funds had been held up illegally by President Bush and the Federal Reserve Board in a Bank of America account in Richmond, VA. Now, he said, quote, we've heard this weekend that the administration is preparing a way to release the funds. And that was said by Michael C. Cottrell, treasurer of the Ameritrust Group, Inc., who are the recipient of the massive offshore repatriation settlement, along with the ambassador, Leo Wanta, who was the former Treasury agent for President Ronald Reagan, who has spearheaded the trillion-dollar windfall for the betterment of the American economy. And he goes on to say, the impact has been felt and there is considerable movement within the Bush administration to release the money. We have heard there is a lot of pressure from G8 members, who are a group of eight industrialized nations, to release the funds by the end of the business day on Monday, July the 31st. And Wanta is the legal trustee of more than $27.5 million in offshore funds illegally diverted by the last three presidential administrations, recently entered into a $4.5 trillion settlement with US authorities on the direction of two federal court judges. However, President Bush and the Fed have illegally blocked the money for over a month, with Wanta now losing patience and giving authorities until the close of business on July the 31st to fork out over the money, or saying he intends to file a federal lawsuit, as well as proceed after the entire $27.5 trillion, which may have matured over the years, to $70 trillion. And finally, Cottrell said, if they turn over the money Monday, I think it will be done quietly with no public announcements. Now, as a follow-up to that, on the 2nd of August, there was another article that came through by Greg Szymanski. So we're now about to find out what happened. And he says, US authorities failed to meet Ambassador Leo Wonta's July the 31st deadline to release $4.5 trillion into the economy, forcing Wonta and his Ameritrust group to try and repatriate $27.5 trillion in offshore funds. Now, we come back to Michael C. Cottrell again, Treasurer of the Ameritrust, and he said on Tuesday, this is Tuesday after the funds should have been released, that authorities were given ample time to make good on the agreed written settlement negotiated by two federal court judges, Wonta and two large law firms from New York and Georgia on behalf of US authorities and overseas bankers. And the $4.5 trillion settlement earmarked for the American people through private funds controlled by Wonta was hammered out several months ago as the partial repatriation of trillions of offshore funds in Wonta's control and subsequently transferred to a Bank of America account in Virginia during May and June. However, instead of the money being put under Ameritrust control, President Bush unexpectedly and without legal authority ordered the private funds blocked, preventing a legal corporate U.S. entity from paying approximately $1.6 trillion in taxes, placing himself in direct violation of federal law with felony consequences. And further, it says, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, aware of the violations of federal law, has failed to take steps to rectify the enormous financial scandal, making him complicit in the crime. It goes on to say, quote, we are now moving full steam ahead to repatriate the entire amount, said Cottrell Tuesday in an extended conversation with the Arctic Beacon. And he said, quote, I can't be specific exactly what we are doing, what we're going to do, as I wouldn't want to tip our hand, but if they want a fine, they've got one. Cottrell, who has extensive experience in complicated worldwide financial methods, has spoken numerous times in the last several weeks, including a guest radio appearance on Greg Szymanski's radio show. And this investigative journal, saying the story was the biggest financial story in the history of the world, and all the big political and financial players around the world were fully aware of dire consequences if the Wonta settlement wasn't honoured. He added that Ambassador Wonta's status as legal trustee of the entire $27.5 trillion gives him authority to round up and repatriate the entire aggregate amount, meaning worldwide financial chaos, since much of the money has been illegally used, as well as opening up a Pandora's box of embezzlement, bribery and murder. Goes on to say that the massive amount of money circulating in more than 190 worldwide banks remains a huge problem for the Bush administration, as it clearly shows how much of the Wonta trillions has been improperly used by many higher-ups in the last three presidential administrations, including President George H. Bush and President William Jefferson Clinton. And it said, instead of the money being properly taxed and used for American interests as prescribed by President Reagan when Wonta was assigned the task to amass the rather large sum of money at the end of the Cold War, criminals in the government, better known as the Illuminati, decided to use it for their own personal globalist agenda, which was far removed and beyond the scope of proper governmental oversight. And it says, documents meticulously gathered and audited by Wonta himself reveal more than $743 billion diverted illegally, including illegal transactions by Bush. Bush one, that is. According to overseas investigators, articles appearing in several overseas financial journals, including the International Currency Review, listen to what may only be the tip of the iceberg regarding the massive corruption involving the Wonta story. There you are. That is a red-hot story, and you have to think that something of that size, again, could see the end of Bush and many of his colleagues. The only question is, how long does it take when you put this one in the hands of the law to actually get a judgment or get something moving? Because clearly, the people who it will affect are going to do everything in, within their power to block any movement on this. So that if you want to know the rest of the story, you can go to arcticbeacon.com and find it on there. So that's an interesting one to keep tabs on as far as any developments. Now, 9/11, I don't think will ever go away from the news until they have an independent inquiry. And I'm sure there isn't a week that doesn't go by when something more comes out about it or there's some comment. And on the 2nd of August, there was an article that I can't... Yes, I can tell you where it came from. It was according to a new Scripps Howard in the Ohio University poll, which said that more than a third of the American public suspects that federal officials assisted in the 9/11 terrorist attacks or took no action to stop them. So the United States go to war in the Middle East. Now, short and sweet, but it's the fact that now, after this period of time, that more than a third of the American public has that feeling about how things are wrong in connection with that attack. So it goes on and on, and more people, I think, are wising up, perhaps, to what's been going on. Now, Danny Egan, who is a Washington Post staff writer, also brought out an article on August the 2nd, and again, he was talking about 9/11 and of allegations brought to Inspectors General, reporting that some staff members and commissioners of the September 11 panel concluded that the Pentagon's initial story of how it reacted to the 2001 terrorist attacks may have been part of a deliberate effort to mislead the commission and the public rather than a reflection of the fog of events on that day, according to sources involved in the debate. Suspicion of wrongdoing ran so deep that the 10-member commission, in a secret meeting at the end of its tenure in summer 2004, debated referring the matter to the Justice Department for criminal investigation, according to several commission sources. And staff members and some commissioners thought that emails and other evidence provided enough probable cause to believe that military and aviation officials violated the law by making false statements to Congress and to the Commission, hoping to hide the bungled response to the hijackings, these sources said. In the end, the panel agreed to compromise, turning over the allegations to the Inspectors General for the Defense and Transportation Departments, who can make criminal referrals if they believe they are warranted, and that was what the official said. And they comment, "We to this day don't know why NORAD, the North American Aerospace Command, told us what they told us," said Thomas H. Keene, the former New Jersey Republican governor who led the commission. "It was just so far from the truth. It's one of those loose ends that never got tied." And so the report goes on a little further, but there you are. There's someone who is taking some action in connection with 9/11. I have another 9/11 item, the last one, just a short one here, and it's talking about the deadly mixture of chemicals, etc., which were exposed when searches were made for survivors in the ruins of the World Trade Center. Now, this is written as a World War IV report from Brooklyn, New York, and there's a further heading here, which is talking about people are dying because the White House EPA and someone else whose name I can't quite read here, related to 9/11 and their comments afterwards about the reopening of Wall Street and being ordered by the Bush administration, who censured crucial EPA and City Health Department warnings about the air after 9/11, which was highly poisonous. And they forced the EPA to say the air is safe to breathe at the World Trade Center. And that has apparently seriously injured the health of Manhattan workers and residents, and it's even killing the heroes who worked at Ground Zero. So if you want the full story of that, you apparently have to go to, where are we, Giuliana Christie Todd Whitman of the New York State and Healthy, sorry, and the City Health Department. Apparently it's a poll summary, and you could have clicked on this one for the full details. I'm sorry, I can't really give you a lead on that one, but you've got the gist of the article. The last one I've got in the general news is one that circulated again on the 30th of July through the email circuit. And it's talking about the Trilateral Cooperation Charter. And Congressman Paul mailed a letter to Acting FDA Commissioner Von Eckenbach demanding to know what the supposed congressional mandate is for the FDA's illegal Trilateral Cooperation Charter with Canada and Mexico. And co-signing the letter along with Congressman Paul were Congressman Virgil Goode, Joanne Davis, Dan Burton and Peter DeFazio. And there's a comment by the writer here saying that in the week I spent on Capitol Hill, I had 18 meetings with staff from the House Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee and with some of the 22 co-sponsors of Congressman Paul's Health Freedom Protection Act. And he was just commenting that the Washington cop almost stopped him from bringing into the building a knapsack full of copies of Byron Richards' book, Fight for Your Health, and expose the FDA's betrayal of America. Because he was taking into the Cannon building, and the cops said no deliveries of books are allowed for anyone since 9/11. But the guy protested, saying that he already brought in four previous knapsacks full, and that he was working with Congressman Paul. And he was actually able to confirm that, so he was allowed into the building where he dropped his load off. But there you are. You may have heard of this Trilateral Cooperation Charter, and there is someone who's questioning the legality of it. Apparently you can read more on thepetitionsite.com. So that's all I have on the general news. I've no doubt week on week now. It should be hotting up a bit, depending on whether they can get a ceasefire in the Middle East. If they can't, let's make one that make one wonder what the outcome will be. Now I'm turning to what I call my UFO file, put one or two items in that. I've got one that may interest you here, which is a printout of the alleged conversation between the NASA astronaut Neil Armstrong when they were on the Apollo 11 shot, which took place on the 21st of July 1969. And you might recall that there was a conversation between Neil Armstrong and NASA talking about what they saw. And although some people picked that up before it was erased, it wasn't actually passed on, I think I'm correct in saying, in the public broadcast. So if you haven't heard it before, you might be interested to hear what was allegedly took place in this conversation. Now, according to NASA astronaut Neil Armstrong, he said the aliens have a base on the moon and that they told them in no uncertain terms to get off and stay off the moon. And according to hitherto unconfirmed reports, both Neil Armstrong and Edwin Buzz Aldrin saw UFOs shortly after that historic landing on the moon in Apollo 11. And the report says, I remember hearing one of the astronauts refer to a light in or on a crater during the television transmission, followed by a request from Mission Control for further information, but nothing more was heard. And he goes on to say that according to a former NASA employee, Otto Binder, unnamed radio hands with their own VHF receiving facilities that bypassed NASA's broadcasting outlets picked up the following exchange. So here it is. So NASA said, "What's there?" Mission Control calling Apollo 11. And Apollo 11 replied, "These babies are huge, so enormous." And he said, "Oh my God, you wouldn't believe it. I'm telling you, there are other spacecraft out there, lined up on the far side of the crater edge. They're on the moon watching us." A certain professor, who wished to remain anonymous, was engaged in a discussion with Neil Armstrong during a NASA symposium. And the professor asked him, he said, "What really happened out there with Apollo 11? And Armstrong replied, "It was incredible. Of course, we had always known there was a possibility. The fact is, we were warned off by the aliens. There was never any question then of a space station or a moon city." And the professor said, "How do you mean, warned off?" And Armstrong said, "I can't go into details except to say their ships were far superior to ours, both in size and technology. Boy, were they big and menacing. No, there is no question of a space station." And the professor said, "But NASA had other missions after Apollo 11. And Armstrong said, "Naturally, NASA was committed at that time and couldn't risk panic on Earth. But it really was a quick scoop and back again." Now, there's a footnote here that says, according to Dr. Vladimir Atarza, he says, "Neil Armstrong relayed the message to Mission Control that two large mysterious objects were watching them after having landed near the moon module, but this message was never heard by the public because NASA censored it." And according to Dr. Alexander Catton said, "Buzz Aldrin took color movie film of the UFOs from inside the module and continued filming them after he and Armstrong went outside." Armstrong confirmed that the story was true, but refused to go into further detail beyond admitting that the CIA was behind the cover-up. So there you are. Interesting. A little bit more information on something I would suppose that is known by a lot of people, but I thought that might interest you. Now, going back to my old Flying Saucer Review magazines, all from the 1960s period, I found again an interesting report, and I can't help repeating myself and saying that it's amazing the number of interesting reports that came out of that period, which I guess to all intents and purposes were just reported on the one occasion and seem to have disappeared from modern day mention, but maybe that is because of the volume of them. But here is one that is a report from Pennsylvania. And the contributor at the time was the secretary of the Pittsburgh UFO Research Institute. And it was talking about humanoids that were seen at Butler. And this was on March the 20th, 1967. Late in the evening, a Mr. Rival and his daughter, Jean, of Butler, Pennsylvania, they took out the family car for a trip around the neighborhood in the hope of glimpsing some unusual lights, because they had seen some earlier. That was Mrs. Ribble, and she described them as flitting around at low altitude. So they went out, and they saw nothing at first as they drove around the back roads of the Butler area, and then decided to pull off the road, switch off the lights of their Volkswagen, and await events. Apparently, they had only been parked for a few minutes when Mr. Ribble, who had stepped out of the car for a better view, spotted two globes of light about a mile down the road and about 200 feet up. And the secondary road on which they were parked is a straight stretch sloping downwards for at least a mile from their observation post. So they had a clear view of the lights, which when first observed looked slightly smaller than the full moon appears to the naked eye, which they measured at about a half inch. The objects travelled towards the Ribbles, or the Rivals, flying parallel to each other and a little way apart. And when about half a mile away, they changed places but maintained the same parallel course, the same distance apart. But they now looked considerably larger, and although they shone yellow-white, they did not light up the whole area over which they travelled. Both Mr. Rival and his daughter first thought they were observing two private aircraft, each with a landing light coming to touch down on the highway where the car was parked. But there were several factors against this. There was no noise, and private aircraft carry much smaller lights. And tight formation flying on a pitch-black night in March, culminating in a landing on an unlit narrow highway, was unlikely to be done, even by an experienced stuntsman. The rivals watched with increasing concern as the two globes of light appeared to land on the road a quarter of a mile away from them, at the foot of the gradient. And they came up the slope at an estimated 70 to 80 miles an hour, looking like the lights of two motorcycles racing along 10 feet apart. And while Mr. Rival stood paralysed with fright next to the Volkswagen, Jean yelled to her father, "Oh my God, they're coming right at the car." Now Mr. Rival reached in through the car window and flicked on the headlights, and the strange lights continued to approach, as he thought, on a collision course with the car. And then 50 yards away from it, they vanished into thin air. And the rivals, crouching, were tensing and bracing themselves for what they believed to be an inevitable contact or impact. So to their astonishment, a few yards away from the bonnet of their Volkswagen car, a group of five figures standing somewhat irregularly in a semicircle. And this was an additional shock which prompted them to swift action. Within a few seconds, the rivals were back in their car, and while the father was busy starting the car and reversing, Jean had a good look at the humanoids, and she said, "They just stood there about 10 feet from the car. They looked like human beings, but their faces totally devoid of expression, and unlike a human face. Their eyes, if you could call them such, were horizontal slits," and she indicated how long they were, and extended her forefinger and thumb to indicate the length of the slits. And she said, "I could not see any irises or pupils, just slits, and I could not see any more detail. Their noses were narrow and pointed, not unlike a human nose, and their mouths were slits like the eyes. Four of the figures were about 5'7" tall, and the fifth was considerably short, about 5 foot. All wore caps with a flat top, not unlike baseball caps, beneath which blonde hair was showing. And the hair of the fifth taller figures was ear length. The shorter humanoid had hair falling to the shoulders, and I thought it might have been a woman. I didn't get a good look at the ears. All five were dressed alike, somewhat sloppily, in grey-green shirts and trousers, not unlike a hunter's outfit. And the shirts, which were open at the neck, were worn outside the trousers. Everything was loose-fitting. The skin on their faces and hands was rough-looking. It resembled scar tissue or skin, which has been severely burned. And she said, "It gave us the creeps, seeing them just standing there, doing nothing. We heard no noise in connection with either the lights or the figures. Father nearly broke the door handle trying to get back into the car, and when we had started the engine, we had to reverse and then go forward and round the figures to miss them. We had been parked on the hard shoulder of the road, and if we had gone straight ahead, we would have run them down as they were standing right in front of the car. To this day, the details of this encounter are clear in my mind. It was the most unforgettable experience of my life, and my father's too." Mr. Rival told the investigators he was so intent on getting away, he had to rely on the description given by his daughter of what she observed from the passenger seat in the car. He had, however, a quick glimpse of the figures and agreed to their numbers and height. Now, under pressure of questioning, Jean mentioned another point which he had at first deliberately refrained from mentioning, and asked if there was anything else of interest relevant to the sighting, no matter how absurd it might sound. She confessed to a curious experience which may be of considerable importance. And she said, "As the light swiftly approached the car coming down the road, I heard a chorus of voices in my head, not with my ears, but I seemed to sense them in my brain. The voices said, 'Don't move, don't move,' and they kept repeating, 'Don't move,' and then they dragged it out." And she said, "When the lights vanished, the voices stopped at once. My father didn't hear a thing, and so I thought I was just hearing things, but now I'm not too sure. I just had to tell you about that." So there we are. That's as much as I think I need to read. Apparently, the investigators learned that Jean, near hysterical, was driven immediately after the sighting to their local church and comforted by the minister who was there, and a father went with them. They are quite a frightening experience, no doubt. But there you are. I don't know whether in those times, those meetings with humanoids actually got into the press. I have a feeling perhaps they were suppressed, because they may have thought in that time that they were not going to be really accepted by people. Now, I have an article in the Flying Saucer Review that talks about a new wave of sightings in South America. And there's one or two of contacts with ETs, and I thought I'd read this one out as a final UFO item, talking about someone on the June 4th, 1968, who gave details of an extraordinary recent happening to the well-known Argentine painter and sculptor Benjamin Solari, Paravicini. And that person claimed that after midnight, he was walking home from the theatre in Buenos Aires, and a copy of the programme was in his hand. So the night was foggy, and he tells us that in view of the fog or mist mentioned in teleportation cases, we should take careful note at this point. The streets thereabouts were deserted, and he arrived at the corner of one of the streets, and he said he was suddenly confronted what appeared to look at first to be a madman, a fair-skinned Nordic type of man whose eyes were so light in colour that it looked as though he were blind. And he said this individual detained him and addressed him in an unintelligible guttural language, but his manner was kind and even gentle. And he said, looking upwards on this man's instructions, Paravicini then beheld through the fog and at a distance of only about 150 feet away, close to the tower building of the Argentine Ministry of Public Works, an extraordinary aerial ship with no lights. And then he was overcome by dizziness, and when he recovered, he found himself, along with three other individuals, inside the machine, which was in flight. And one of these people, very handsome, was questioning him in a language which was unintelligible to him, yet his mind understood, or seemed to understand, the thoughts of the alien being. In other words, as Paravicini said, it was a case of direct telepathic communication. The alien told him not to be alarmed, they would merely take him for one trip around the Earth, and then would put him down again at the precise spot where they had taken him aboard. And a few minutes later, Paravicini found himself observing surface features what he recognised as Japan, then France, and then Chile. And when he had returned, as he said, from what he called his dream, he found himself back at the corner of the road where he disappeared from. And he said, there on the pavement nearby was this theatre programme which had fallen from his hand before the experience. So, Paravicini concluded by saying that the alien beings had now contacted him several times, and he said they told him that they were watching and patrolling our planet to see that no catastrophe befalls it. That's an interesting one. I mean, you have to think of the ones that received publicity, that is, where humans were taken on board craft and given a quick trip round the Earth or even into the solar system, that we have very few people of that nature. I mean, George Adamski is the person who comes to mind. But there are. There's, I guess, an equally interesting one, particularly if you could have gained more information as to what the additional contacts resulted in or what they were for. So whether there is something else in the follow-up magazines to that one, I don't know. It would have been interesting to know that. Anyway, that's all on that side. Now what I'm coming to finish the programme up, and I've got plenty of material here, is general messages of a spiritual nature. There's no shortage of those. I don't really have to go looking for them. They come my way. Some come from the site that I work on, which is the Tree of the Golden Light, from Nancy Tate, and I have one or two of hers here, which I would like to read from. But what I'd like to start with is one that short article here, which is about the ascension process, which interests a lot of people. And it comes from the website called AshtarOnTheRoad.com. And it comes through Susan Leyland. And it's talking about there being many, many millions of beings upon the planet. And it said, who are used to being controlled, enslaved and dominated. And they are afraid right now of the changes. And the contact said, if you can imagine that there are those who are genuinely afraid of the changes and the transition to the Golden Age and to the ascension process and all the things that are going on. And she quotes, they're having some conditions in their physicalities, for instance, that are chalking it up to infirmities of age and different situations that they themselves have created in their own lives. And they don't know that that's a part of what they are experiencing is what is called galactic ascension syndrome. Indeed, does that not lighten up the whole of it? And she said, and those headaches, those upset stomachs, the great overwhelming need to take a nap when you've never napped before, go with the flow. It is nothing to fear, nothing at all. And you will find that if you ask what is going on, and you really, really are sincerely, and you decide to take responsibility for co-creating a bit more comfort, you will flow with it quite easily, and in so doing, you may be able to assist others who are just plain scared and haven't even thought about taking responsibility for their own wellness, and most importantly, for their own ascension progress. And she says, quote, you see, everyone is in ascension process, whether they want to be or not. It's at the beginning. Some have taken great leaps onto that high road, and they're feeling more and more, shall we say, lightened up. They are dwelling more and more in the higher dimension. But there are also those who are resisting change, and are just at the beginning of the path. Well, the path has a fork in it, and it is up to each individual to determine whether they will take the continued fork, or whether they will take the halt, I'm not ready for this, I still have lessons to learn in the darker aspects of 3D Earth. Everyone is being asked to make those choices, and in large part those choices have been made. So those who are still with it, even though they may be consciously afraid or unconsciously, or in their higher selves are aware of the process is going on. And the report that I've got here concludes, and we're happy to report that there's a majority of light emanating and radiating from all parts of your planet. And so the ascension process is going on, even in those millions who are unaware of it, and who have fears about the Earth changes, the Earth weather patterns, the financial instabilities of your many banking institutions and the governments themselves. There you are, that's it. Well, I thought that's quite interesting. I mean, you really have to be interested, I think, in anything that comes through about the ascension process, because it is an important part of the time we're in now, and certainly as time goes by, it's going to become even more important, and I think almost a daily subject, certainly after first contact has been made, and we really get down to doing something. Now, one of my favourite sources of messages is Michael's messages, that's Archangel Michael, from or through Rona Herman. I think she's all but completed her stint in taking the messages from Archangel Michael, that's how I understand it. And he does come through one, if not two or three other people. But there's an excellent message, and I really have to read it all out to you because it's so good, and I do love his messages. You can just tell from the quality and the feel of it how reliable it is and how true it is, shall we say. Now, this was a message for July this year. In fact, it was an excerpt from one that was being presented at Yellowstone Park, Montana. And it was talking about the next step in your sacred quest. And I have to read most of this because it's really good. And he says, beloved masters, we implore you, do not place us out there in some far distant nebulous realm. Please sense us with your heart as well as your mind, and allow us to meld with you as we endeavour to merge our essence with yours in your earthly environment. The unity, the harmony, and beauty of your home environments in the higher dimensions are beyond your comprehension. Those of you who have tapped into the bliss state of the higher realms have an inkling of how precious, beautiful, unique and wonderful it is in your homeland among the stars. One of the greatest desires is to make the worlds of the high realms of light real for you. We want to give you a sense of empowerment, a sense of how magnificent you are, the potential you have stored within you, and the precious gifts that have lain dormant within you for so many ages. You have been sleepwalking, you have been at slumber, you have shields and veils which have created illusions and distortions in your earthly world of reality. You have been in the midst of a great drama in which you have played multiple roles. You have become accustomed to the drama of exaggerated polarity and duality, and it has taken much effort, tenacity and wisdom to bring yourselves back to the center and to gain control of the ego desire body in order to reclaim self-mastery. It is time to bring forth a new spectacular scenario, another program or reality for you to experience one of mastery, one of walking and living your divinity, one of standing tall, radiant and vibrant as you interact with other masters. Yes, that is your potential. And it frightens you a little, doesn't it? You say, who, me? Yes, you and you, all of you. You would not be here or you would not be reading these messages if you were not ready. And we honour you for answering this call to begin a new spiritual quest. The clarion call that is now echoing throughout the universe is triggering impulses, memories and an urgency beyond anything you can remember in the past. It is the most important call to join the forces of light that you have answered since you agreed to come down through the multi-dimensions and to experience this mandala of creation on planet Earth. It is important that you understand this era of creation is drawing to a close. Humanity is changing. The Earth is changing. Many of the animals and flora and fauna are leaving these realms of expression, but they are not lost. No thing is ever lost. They are returning to their perfected state in a realm of higher resonance in which most of you cannot perceive them. In the third and fourth dimensional mass consciousness reality, it is a common belief that all of the planets in your solar system are barren. And in the third and fourth dimensions, they are. But what about in the fifth and sixth dimensions, where they are teeming with wondrous life and vitality? Is it too much of a stretch of your imagination to accept the fact that you go to these unique and diverse places in between lifetimes on Earth? What do you think you do between lifetimes? Float around on clouds, walk on golden streets? Oh, how boring. You go to many wondrous places, to other galaxies, to the universities and places of learning, where you refresh your memory and prepare yourselves for the next earthly assignment. You also have advisory duties, for you see, you are the ones who teach us what it is like to exist in a physical body and to experience the limitations of the compressed, diminished realms of creation. You are the ones who are making it possible for the Supreme Creator to anchor the living light of transformation on the Earth. You are the facilitators of the ascension process, and without it, it would not happen. You are the ones who have experienced the broadest spectrum of polarity and duality, and you are the ones who must return to your center of harmony so that all else can be brought back into balance. Remember, we're not asking you to do anything that you have not done before. You have all the components, all the wisdom, everything you need intrinsically within you to be or become anything you can envision. If you can envision a reality and it is in line with your divine mission for the greatest good of all, you can manifest it. We stress this over and over again, but you still do not accept it as your truth. What are you waiting for? You are the ones who will create the wondrous cities of light on the earthly plane. You are the ones who will establish new sacred power centers whereby the peoples of Earth may come to be healed, nurtured, and transformed. You are the ones who will help the Earth to heal and return to its pristine beauty. The Supreme Creator, our Father, Mother, God, and we are supplying the creative fire of transformation, but it is you, the star seed on Earth, who must integrate this formula for change and radiate it to humanity and the Earth. We have spoken often of the return to oneness. However, we know you are not yet aware of how important this concept is. You cannot see these streams of light, but nevertheless you are connected to every soul on this planet by an energetic stream of light which is very, very, very fragile and very minuscule. And so that is why we say, what happens to one happens to all. In some way, whether positive or negative, everything that takes place on Earth affects all of humanity and also reverberates out into the universe in a diminished or magnified capacity. Diminished if it is negative and magnified if it is positive energy. And so, as you gently lift and refine your energy and move forward, your light is radiating forth from you in an infinity sign in every direction. You are opening the path, beloved. You are the way showers, and we are asking you to step forward and open the pathway to the cities of light that are awaiting you. We ask you to join your brothers and sisters of light, those of you who are ready and willing to join together in order to fulfill this next phase of the divine plan for ascending humanity. More of you who answer the call and learn to access the celestial cities of light, the in order to anchor the living light of ascension within yourselves and within the earth, the faster the transformation into the fifth dimension will sweep the earth. The oneness and unity consciousness of the legions of light will be magnified exponentially as you allow us to overlight you and guide you through this grand passage into the realms of light. And Archangel Michael completes it by saying, as always, you're under our guidance and protection. I am Archangel Michael. I think that's a wonderful message. They really, for me, pack a lot of energy. And I think when you read them, or hopefully when you hear them, you cannot help be impressed by that. Now, from Patricia Diana Cota-Robles, who's got a website, eraofpeace.org, mid-July came out through email an article called The Need of the Hour. And I thought some of the statements here, again, were very interesting and worth reading out. Now, she says, we have been given unprecedented assistance from the Company of Heaven as we progress towards the tremendous influx of light that will occur from August the 12th to the 17th. Now, that's why I kept the message back, because obviously that period is coming up. And she says, the intent of this divine intervention is to help prepare every man, woman and child at a cellular level to absorb the maximum frequencies of perfection from the fifth dimension. With every breath, each person's I Am presence is now accelerating the energy, vibration and consciousness of his or her physical, etheric, mental and emotional bodies. This may feel stressful and overwhelming at times, but the acceleration process will not be taken beyond what the person can withstand. And she says, remember, through our I Am presence, we have all given permission for this acceleration. We did not do this because we are masochists. We agreed to this acceleration because we were shown the quantum leap up the spiral of evolution. The Earth will be able to accomplish with this awesome influx of light. With that realization, we decided that whatever we had to go through would be worth the sacrifice. That this acceleration progress involves another incredible opportunity that is being given to humanity by our Father, Mother, God, and the Company of Heaven. This opportunity involves the influx of fifth dimensional frequencies of the violet flame that will help us to quickly transmute the negativity that is being pushed to the surface to be healed all over the planet. This is a unique experiment that has never been attempted in any of the system of worlds. The success of this experiment is totally dependent on you and me and the awakening souls all over the world who are willing to be the open door to the light of God. And she says, we have each been preparing for eons of time to fulfill this facet of the divine plan. We have everything we need pulsating within our very beings to God to victoriously accomplish this mighty feat. And she says, to further prepare ourselves as we move closer and closer to the events in August, we have been given a meditation by the beings of light in the realms of truth, and this gift from on high will greatly assist in alleviating our physical stress and will make our process more comfortable. Now, I don't propose to read the meditation out, but obviously, if that interests you, you can go to her website and pick it up. It's from an article, as I say, about mid-July, called The Need of the Hour, and the site is eraofpeace.org. Now, that hasn't quite brought me to the end of my program, but almost. So I will conclude it by taking a few quotes from a message from Nancy Tate, which she received on July the 25th from Hatton. And he's saying, you have constantly and without question brought this planet to a place in its evolvement where there is a definitive energy of transformation that is being perpetrated and released to do the job that is destined for humanity and all of the universe at this time. there is a new paradigm taking place as these words are being written, and with this new paradigm there will be a zeroing out of all the compromises to this incredible ability of all of you to rise to the occasion and bring about this mass awakening that is in a landslide momentum to the top. The war energy on this planet is at an all-time high. This is evident in the newscasts and the papers that are circulating throughout the world. What you are not hearing and reading is the numbers of casualties that are prevalent. For to report the true numbers would be the cause of mass exodus from the way of life that the cabal has established. They have orchestrated a perfectly planned refusal of truth that is being generated to the people of the world as truth. They have, however, not foreseen that the truth will out, and as that takes place, the momentum of the masquerade will explode, and the truth of what they have been doing and how they have represented the world to be will be blown wide apart, and the public will rise up and take control of their fair land once and for all. The people will find that they have been lied to, and that they have been coerced into the sleepiness that has overcome them. So there you are. I think that's an appropriate part to conclude the program today. I hope you enjoyed the items that I have selected. Next week, I should have, hopefully, what will be an extremely interesting report from the Galactic Federation through Sheldon Nidal. So I'm looking forward to that. Hope you enjoyed the program. Thank you for being with me. God bless you all.